Today, I'm proud to publicly tell everyone that I'm gay.
The first lesbian magazine coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
Leviticus 18:22 and 20:30 talk about man should not lie with a man as with a woman. At first glance, it would seem to mean homosexual sex. It's an abomination. Whoever does it should be put to death. Right? No.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Chile climbs one Senate step closer to marriage equality. We find lesbian history in the fine print. And a queer Aussie faith activist takes down toxic texts. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Paula Thomas.
And I'm Wendy Natividad.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 24th, 2021. Chile's Senate has finally approved marriage equality. The vote was not close, 28 in favor and 14 opposed. After years of resistance, right-wing President Sebastián Piñera suddenly announced his surprising support for equality in early June. Less than equal civil unions had been available to gay and lesbian Chilean couples since 2015. MOVIL, the Movement for Homosexual Integration and Liberation, is the South American nation's leading queer advocacy group. They had entered into an agreement with socialist former president Michelle Bachelet in 2012. To enact marriage equality and open adoption to same-gender couples. MOVIL officially withdrew from the deal last October in frustration with the government's inaction. President Piñera had also disregarded the Inter-American Court of Human Rights 2018 order that all members of the Organization of American States open civil marriage to queer couples if they had not already done so. MOVIL spokesperson Rolando Jimenez said that, "It is not a right or left issue. It is not anyone's ideological workhorse. It has to do with the dignity and human rights of children." The measure now goes to Chile's Chamber of Deputies. With Piñera's strong support, passage there is expected in the next few weeks.
Marriage equality has been the law of the land in neighboring Argentina since 2010, and now it's the first Latin American country to allow an X-gender marker on a non-binary person's national identity document. It came in the form of an official decree by President Alberto Fernandez this week. The announcement said that it implements the rights recognized under the gender identity law, interpreting its scope beyond binaryism. Provisions of that law included allowing trans people to change their legal gender without medical intervention. In September 2020, Fernandez ordered that at least 1% of all public sector jobs go to transgender applicants. Argentine queer rights activist Mariano Ruiz told the Washington Blade, "We hope that we will soon have a new law against discriminatory acts and a comprehensive law for trans people." Argentina joins India, Canada, New Zealand, the U.S., and a few other countries that allow the non-binary X-gender marker on government documents.
At least 24 people have been arrested in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi for participating in violent anti-LGBTQ pride attacks, according to Pink News. Under the country's criminal code, they are being charged with participating in group violence, unlawful interference with a journalist's professional activities, and persecution using violence or threat of violence. At least 50 journalists covering the early July melees reported being injured by mobs that targeted them, along with activists and bystanders. The Orthodox Church-inspired ultra-nationalist violence included an anti-queer protest march and an unruly demonstration outside the venue hosting a queer film festival. TV cameraman Alex Laskarova died after being beaten during the ransacking of the offices of Pride Week organizers. Officers forcibly removed Laskarova's body from his family's home. The government claims an autopsy showed that the photojournalist died of a drug overdose. Georgian government officials are also insisting that LGBTQ people are responsible for the violence because they had flaunted public safety concerns. Demands for the government's resignation heard during the days of demonstrations after Lashkarova's death, have apparently abated.
Hungary's right-wing Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has responded to pressure from the European Union by announcing a referendum on the country's law banning queer-positive representation in schools or on television. The European Commission had told Orbán's government to repeal the no-promo-homo law or face significant sanctions, including hefty fines. In a July 21st Facebook post calling for Hungarian voters to decide the issue, Orbán declared, "The future of our children is at stake, so we cannot cede ground on this issue." Orbán has held power since 2010 and is seeking re-election in April. He has yet to announce exactly when the referendum will be held, but the five questions citizens will be asked to vote on are highly toxic. Do they support sexual orientation workshops in schools without parental consent? Do they believe gender reassignment procedures should be discussed among children, and should children be allowed to access those procedures? Should content that could affect children's sexual orientation be shown on television without restriction? The next move in this ongoing chess game is the European Commission's. There's been no comment as yet from the EU's executive branch about Orbán's proposed referendum.
Beleaguered transgender young people in the United States enjoyed three legal victories this week. The Louisiana legislature's Republican majority failed to override Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards' veto of a bill to ban transgender youth from competing in school sports. It was the first ever special session called to override a governor's veto. The override succeeded in the Senate with a bare minimum 26 votes, but fell two votes short in the required two-thirds majority in the House, 68 to 30. Weeks ago, Edwards proclaimed his intention to veto any bill that discriminates against LGBTQ people. He told a news briefing following the House vote that what he called the mean bill targeted the most emotionally fragile children in the state of Louisiana. I would rather the headlines going out from today be that Louisiana did what was right and best.
A federal judge in Arkansas issued an injunction this week preventing the enforcement of a law banning gender-affirming medical care for trans minors. It's the first measure of its kind in the U.S., and Republican lawmakers succeeded in overriding their own Governor Asa Hutchinson's veto. He has happily signed other anti-trans bills, but acknowledged that this one would lead to significant harms. The injunction will remain throughout the legal challenge. An 11-year-old transgender athlete, Becky Pepper Jackson, must be allowed to try out for her high school girls' cross-country and track teams by order of a federal judge in West Virginia. This week's ruling essentially blocks the state from enforcing a ban on trans female student athletes passed by the Republican-dominated legislature. Becky's attorneys from Lambda Legal and the ACLU of West Virginia reported that she was excited by the ruling. She said, "It hurt that the state of West Virginia would try to block me from pursuing my dreams. I just want to play."
The publishers of the always anticipated annual Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue have topped themselves after featuring Brazilian Valentina Sampaio as their first trans woman model last year. This year, trans model Lena Bloom made history several times over as the issue's cover model. The Black and Filipina model is not only the swimsuit issue's first trans cover selection, she's the first trans woman of color to appear among the yearly bevy of beauties. Bloom had already won international fame as mother of the House of Miyake Mugler and walking the category of face in New York City's ballroom scene. She posted the trailblazing cover on her Instagram account, with a message saying she hopes it empowers those who are struggling to be seen, feel valued. Let me be a messenger guiding us to a future of respect and appreciation for all women in all forms and from all walks of life.
Finally,
1-on-3, been a lot of that for the Patsies, drilled by Luke Prokop, and down goes Inglot.
Hi, everyone. While the past year and a half has been crazy, it has also given me the chance to find my true self. I am no longer scared to hide who I am. Today, I'm proud to publicly tell everyone that I'm gay.
That's Luke Prokop, reading the first few lines of his Twitter post for ESPN. The 19-year-old Nashville Predators prospect is the first active player under National Hockey League contract to come out. Standing 6'4" and weighing 217 pounds, he was an alternate captain on the Calgary Hitmen in Western Hockey League play in the 2020-2021 season. Prokop enjoys the support of his family, his teammates, the team's front office, and the league. He was interviewed at length by ESPN's Emily Kaplan.
Being able to go to the rink and the gym every day and just being able to focus on getting better, getting stronger, getting faster, getting more powerful, and not having to think if other people know or don't know, it's going to make me so much more confident and so much more free, and I'll just be able to focus on trying to be the best hockey player I can be.
Left circle, Thacker shooting, blocked by Luke Prokop, who filled the lane beautifully.
I'm finally going to be able to breathe and exhale and show the world the real me. And I'm so excited to see where that will take me, not only as a hockey player, but as a person as well.
We're all rooting for top National Hockey League prospect Luke Prokop.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending July 24th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Wendy Natividad. Stay healthy.
And I'm Paula Thomas. Stay safe.
I'm Diddly Day, an actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
Those passages have been known as the clobber passages, unfortunately, which gives a pretty good indicator of the how these verses have been used against LGBT people.
Coming up, clobbering the Bible clobberers, after the story of a journo evangelist of lesbian life.
The first lesbian magazine, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The first known lesbian publication in the world was Vice Versa, first coming out in June 1947. It was created and distributed by Edith Ide, also known by her pen name Lisa Benn. Her job at RKO Studios in Los Angeles didn't give her much to do, but her boss wanted her to look busy and didn't care what she was typing. Ide had a crush on a girl in high school and was now interested in making lesbian friends. Her involvement with Vice Versa would be the answer. Including short stories, editorials, book reviews, and a letter column, I typed each issue twice through, with 5 carbon copies, making a total of 12 copies. She hand-delivered them to friends and encouraged them to pass them on. Although I'd created just 9 issues, her efforts mark her as a pioneer in LGBT journalism. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Paige McCleary.
Good news, ain't that good news?
Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out?
We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show.
All you have to do is email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will.
Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out, and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
And this is Bishop Gene Robinson.
And I'm listening to This Way Out,
the international
LGBTQ
radio magazine.
It's not easy to foster constructive dialogue about queer life and traditional religion. That's the calling, Australian former Pentecostal preacher Anthony Venn Brown answered when he founded Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International in 2013. Venn Brown and his organization helped put together a multi-faith webinar to explore LGBTQ-related texts found in the Bible, the Torah, and the Quran. This Way Out Sydney correspondent Barry McKay brings us highlights in a three-part series. Here's part one. Come out and go forth. Come out and go forth. Come out of the past with its narrow views. Go forth to the world to spread good news. Come out and go forth. Wide and strong is God's embrace. Out of shame and into grace. Meet the challenge face to face. Come out and go forth.
In the first part of the webinar, Anthony Venn Brown speaks about the so-called clobber passages in the Bible used against LGBTQ people, the history of how they came to be misused against the LGBT communities, the original meaning of the texts, and the progressive Christian theology increasingly being accepted nowadays.
I thought it'd be good, first of all, just to mention that, there are only six passages out of 331,000 verses in the Bible that actually refer to same gender activity. You'll note that I mentioned same gender activity and not homosexuality, because the Bible never actually speaks about sexual orientation. It was not a concept at that time. That didn't happen until the end of the 19th century. So those passages have been known as the clobber passages, unfortunately, which gives a pretty good indicator of how these verses have been used against LGBT people. Probably the most well-known of these passages is Genesis 19, which is a story of Sodom and Gomorrah, well-known to even non-Christians who believe it and also quote it. It's believed that this happened about 2000 BC. Essentially, what happened is that two angels came to the city of Sodom. Lot asked them to if they would like to stay for the night, as is part of the hospitality culture of that time and of that place. When the people of the town realized what had happened, they demanded that Lot bring out the angels, and they wanted to rape them. Lot refused, but he offered his two virgin daughters. Lot was nearly attacked by the mob, but the angels put him inside and blinded the people outside. So this was not actually about homosexuality. This was about sexual violence, assault, and rape, which went on in biblical times, but also goes on today in places of conflict. It's the supreme act of heterosexual dominance and humiliation. There's also a common belief in biblical times that divine power could be obtained by having sex with divine beings or with their representatives, which would be temple prostitutes, temple priests. And it was the gods that granted fertility for crops, herbs, and this could be obtained by worship and ritual. So it's not a question to assume that this is what was happening in this situation. The most obvious thing with this story, though, of course, is rape, not homosexuality. The next two verses come from Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13. Both of these talk about man should not lie with a man as with a woman. At first glance, it would seem to mean homosexual sex. It's an abomination. Whoever does it should be put to death. Right? No. The context here is that these verses are talking to the people of Israel who are going to the promised land, and God was giving them instructions to go in and inhabit the land, but to not do the things that the other nations in the land did, that they were going to dispossess. And they had worshipped fertility gods, which included the rituals of sexual activity with temple prostitutes. So God was telling his people, the Israelites, that they were never to turn away from following him and begin worshipping pagan gods of the other nations. It's got nothing to do with homosexuality. Then we come to the New Testament. are the end of Romans chapter 1. It says that Paul writing here, he says they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal men. And what these people did with degrading of their bodies with one another, they served created things rather than the Creator. And because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones, the same way men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty of their perversion. What this is talking about is actually a pagan ritual, one that Paul, the writer to the Romans, would have been very, very familiar with. Corinth was one of the sex capitals of that time. And atop of the hill above Corinth was the temple of Aphrodite, the goddess of love, or as some people call it, sex. The temple ruin still stands there today. So it was supposedly famous for an abundance of both male and female prostitutes. A historian by the name of Goldberg gives an amazing description of a particular pagan ritual at this time, which included lots of erotic bloodletting. They stripped off their garments. They actually castrated themselves and threw their bleeding testicles into houses as they went by. And the priest who castrated himself in a religious frenzy assumed feminine dress and continued the service of the temple like the priestesses served man for the required fee. They were, as Goldberg says, male priests serving males in the temple of all gods. So I know lots of gay people, but I've never met any like that. And then the final verse that I want to just point out to you is from 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. It says, Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor those habitually drunk or verbal abusers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. This is the first time the word homosexual actually appeared in an English translation of the Bible. It was a Revised Standard Version, the New Testament, in 1946. There were two Greek words they didn't know what to do with, malakos and arsenokatoi. And these did not appear anywhere else. It was challenging to translate. So the work had begun on this in 1937, when no one really understood homosexuality or even actually spoke about it. Homosexuals were considered perverts, deviants, pedophiles, and psychopaths. The translators were literally taking a stab in the dark with this translation of these words, which is being reflected by the myriad of translations afterwards from masturbators, sodomites, effeminate, catamites, or sexual offenders. Here's something really interesting as I'm coming to a close. Recent research by Ed Oxford and Kathy Baldock has revealed even more about this verse. In the archives at Yale University, they found the notes of the translators. On the third day, they found in an exchange of letters between a seminary student and Luther Allen Weigel, who was the head of the RSV translation team. This seminary student challenged the usage of the word homosexual in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9, and provided a detailed outline of his reasoning. Weigel responded and admitted that the translation team had indeed made a mistake and would seek to correct it in their next update. It was too late. Contracts have been signed, editions published, and many other translations have used the RSV as their base without knowing that the word homosexual was in doubt, including the American Standard Version of the Bible, the Living Bible, the New International Version. And a documentary is being made about this right now, which is going to be released in 2022. So, of course, these misinterpretations of these six verses has been questioned for some time now. I actually have a book here by Derek Sherwin Bailey. It was written in 1955 called Homosexuality and the Christian Tradition. And it was Bailey's work deconstructing all these verses, everything I've just mentioned, which informed the Wolford Report and which led to the decriminalization of homosexuality in the UK. When you do the study and when you do the research and discover that you have been believed a falsehood for so long, that's very disturbing. You feel very betrayed. And of course, your relationship with the divine is wrapped up in that as well. So that then causes conflict. The other thing, of course, is the more that we work in this space, as all of us do, we realize how horrendous these mistranslations and the lack of rigorous academic study or even just simple honesty or understanding of the historical and cultural context and the original language has driven people to take their own lives. The Christian church has a lot to answer for in this area. Within my particular context, the fundamental Pentecostal evangelical, people have a belief system, which I always liken it to like a cement wall or brick wall with all these, you know, bricks in it. And so what we're asking them to do is to take that homosexual brick out, have a look at it and say, well, you know, there are different ways of interpreting that. Have you? Oh, and they go, actually, you're right. Then what do they do with that brick? It doesn't fit back in the wall. And also the other thing is that it then challenges the validity of every other brick in the wall. So this is a huge challenge for it because their whole eternal security is based upon their belief of the scriptures.
You can find further in-depth explanations of these webinar talks at abbi.org.au/audio-resources. The entire webinar can be accessed through the Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International website at abbi.org.au, where there is additional discussion and further questions answered by the three interfaith webinar participants. Just search for Christian, Jewish, and Islamic sacred texts and LGBT under latest news on the homepage. Next time, we will hear from Jewish bar mitzvah teacher and radical fairy Kim Gottlieb on Jewish texts referring to LGBTQ people in the Tanakh.
People in our tradition, in the very Orthodox, they would sit shiva for a child that was a male that was gay, which is a process of that you do for someone who's died. And that's pretty intense.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Paul Thomas and Wendy Natividad, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Paige McCreary, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Barry McKay. Norman Greenbaum and Marcia Stevens-Pino performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This way, our thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, donors James Kennedy, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 8CCC, Alice Springs, Australian Northern Territory, WJOX, Northampton, Massachusetts, KKFI, Kansas City, Missouri, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.